Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, today is Thursday, February 4th, 2010. This is your host, Doug Kelly. I'm here with my good friend and co-host, Grant Rubin. Stay, Grant.
Hey, Doug. How are you this evening?
I'm good. We are trying to get a hold of Dr. Roll. Everything was confirmed, and the number's just not going through. I know it works, so we'll keep trying to work on that here and see if we can't get him on the phone.
Uh-oh, we're in trouble now.
Yeah, I know. I don't even know what to say. I mean, what do you say about that?
You know? Yeah, well, you know, hey, maybe Dr. Roll is not on the right phone system tonight or whatever, because he did confirm with us today. And,
yeah.
And we all know Dr. Roll, the eminent Dr. Roll, is rather elderly, so there's always a possibility. It just slipped his mind momentarily, but
mm-hmm.
he might be with us. And if that's the case, then we certainly, you know, understand, and we'll, you know, in the worst case scenario, he will be on the show. It just may take us one or two shows to get him here, but we'll get him here.
Yeah.
Because Dr. Roll is just a wonderful, wonderful educator and has a lot to offer us. And for those who have not had the benefit of listening to this gentleman speak and talk about the research he's done, it's a real delight because he was a real pioneer and still is.
Yeah, he did so much for parapsychology, and even our own board member Kevin Costa had studied under him. And I know I see Kevin's in the chat room. Hey, Kevin, if you are inclined to join us, give us a call, or let me know, and I'll call you on Skype. While we continue to try to hook up, I did send Dr. Roll an email. Giving him the number to call in, so hopefully we'll hear from him and we'll try it in a little bit here. Let's see, what can we talked about parapsychology and quantum entanglement at least to the extent we could last week, and so in the hopes that Dr. Roll will be joining us shortly, we need to come up with something. I will tell you this, if you're a Paranexus member, you might want to check out the forum. Paranexus Forum, there is some interesting footage that one of our members, Diane Myers, has posted in the, let me see what forum board that is.
Yeah, that's some very interesting video that we've received, thanks to them.
Mm-hmm. It's in the video submissions forum, that's only accessible to Paranexus members, but it shows kind of a dark entity off in the distance in the woods in daytime, really moving quickly. There's not much of it, and she didn't even know that it was there when she was filming. And we're exploring that video right now, but the interesting thing about it, to me, it was so reminiscent of the Patterson-Gimlin film. I asked her if there was any Bigfoot sightings in the area, and she said, yes, there have been. People in the area have been seeing something, and of course, you know, that's a common story.
Well, as we kind of discussed before we went on the air, too, Doug, was the fact that one of the things that that struck me about the video was the gait The way the animal or whatever it was walking, it was very reminiscent of the way that the hominid walked in the Patterson-Gimlin tape. The same sort of stride, even though it seemed to be sped up. And you know, much credit goes to Mike Jones for...
And
those two fellows really did a lot of work on it and slowed it down. And so, you know, if you're a member, by all means, check it out, because it's one of the more interesting videos we've received on anomalous, or cryptozoology in quite some time. So,
mm-hmm.
And especially when these folks, and set the stage, Doug, let them know where it was, because it was like, it was not, you know.
It was in the boondocks in Georgia is where it was, and, you know, wooded area, daytime. There was one of the investigators there claimed that he was seeing these, the predator type apparitions, you know, where they're cloaked. You know, it's kind of the heat off the highway type of thing. And so she turned the camera on and was filming that and just filming around. And they didn't even know they got it until they reviewed it. And it was off in the distance. It's, I don't even know how far off.
That's difficult to ascertain. There's no doubt about that.
It is. And, I mean, it's one of the better pieces of footage we've seen. We can't quickly... explain it. I mean, it's possible that there was a person out there walking very quickly away. In real time, that it was almost like this entity was just gliding across the ground very quickly. And I guess a person could be there, but where they were at, there was, like she said, only three people lived in the area. I mean, it's possible, but we're still looking at it. We're waiting for the raw video. We're trying to get the raw video so that we can...
Yeah, if we can enhance the resolution, we might be able to get some greater detail on it, but it's going to be... that's going to be a little bit difficult, but nonetheless, it's a very intriguing sort of video.
Yes, it is. So, I'm trying to think of some other things.
We could talk about our 100th show coming up, Doug.
Yeah. Next week, our 100th show, we're going to be inviting... Paranexus members to call in for a few minutes and share their best cases, tips, tools, techniques, points of passion in the anomalous field. And so if you're a Paranexus member, we'd love to have you call in. And let us know, though. Shoot us an email. Just send it to admin@paranexus.org and let us know that you're going to chime in. And if anybody in our chat room would like to call up and share stories or anything, we've got the lines open here. We do have a call. It looks like it might be Dr. Roll. So let's take that call. Hold on 1 second. Hello, this is Doug. Who am I speaking with?
Yes, this is William Roll.
Dr. Roll, yeah. How are you?
Yeah, well, I'm sorry.
Welcome, Dr. Roll.
Yeah.
Sorry we missed the call. That's great.
Yeah.
Good to have you on the program. And how have you been lately? I haven't had a chance to talk to you in a couple of years.
Yeah, just fine. Thank you.
Good. We wanted to talk about your paper, Parapsychology and Quantum Entanglement, as I mentioned in the email. It's the one that you delivered, I believe, in Europe about a year and a half ago, August 2008.
Yeah, okay.
Was that in Switzerland?
I don't know. It would either be in Sweden or...
Sweden. Probably Sweden.
Stockholm or Copenhagen.
Well, I guess the first question I'd like to ask is, you know, what got you looking at quantum physics as connected to parapsychology?
Well, I don't know precisely when it happened, but it happened a couple of years ago. And, of course, the big problem in parapsychology has been that we have no clue about how, say, an agent in a percipient in a telepathy experiment are connected, or in clairvoyance, which is ESP of physical events, physical objects. There's no energy that travels from the object to the person, to the ESP subject. So how can it happen? And of course,
yeah,
what?
Good question.
Well, of course, that's a question that has stymied the field, basically, and has made the skeptics naturally say, well, there's nothing to it. Let's forget about this. And then it turns out that the quantum physics precisely says the same, namely, that two things that have been connected and are then separated will remain connected. The term is entangled.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have been, if you are connected with somebody, a relative, a friend, or either genetically or emotionally connected, when you are separated, according to this quantum mechanical point of view, you remain connected. So there will naturally be a correlation between what goes on in your head and what goes on in another person's head, or what goes on in the physical world.
And that was part of the point of your paper, when you cited an example where two people spent a lot of time together, what was it, a month or something on that order, and they became connected, if you will, but then once they were taken apart or separated, there was still some connection, right?
Yeah, well, actually, the prior connection can be much less than that. The two people can have been meditating together, strangers meditating together, or being with each other together. It apparently doesn't take much. A lot of psi experiments have been done, and ESP guessing is not involved. They just look at what happens in the brain of these two individuals when they're separated, and what happens is that their brains remain correlated. There are various types of various signs of this correlation. It can be voltage changes, and it can be other changes in the brain. But anyhow, a bunch of experiments, not by me but by my colleagues, have shown that this takes place. So the upshot of it is that the paranormal is no longer paranormal. It's normal.
Right. Yeah, I was wondering if you're going to work that one in.
And then, of course, then there's all the evidence from neuropsychology that shows that brain processes come into play, and they come into play much the same way as they do in ordinary behavior and ordinary perception.
Huh. So, in your mind, does this quantum entanglement pretty much provide a more solid basis for parapsychology?
Absolutely. It not only provides a more solid, it provides a solid basis. There's a Nobel guy in quantum physics. His name is Brian Josephson. He's a professor of physics at the University of Cambridge, England. And he even goes so far to say that experiments in telepathy and psychokinesis provide stronger evidence for entanglement connections than experiments in quantum physics itself. So here's a guy, very traditional, a Nobel laureate, who says that experimental evidence in parapsychology provides better evidence for quantum physics than experiments in quantum physics itself.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
It's interesting that if that's the case, we still see that a lot of mainstream scientists who are studying quantum physics still shying away from parapsychology, right?
Yeah, well, that's sort of ingrained in their blood. But a lot of quantum physicists approve and accept and support the parapsychological enterprise.
Could you repeat that for me? I'm sorry.
Yeah, a lot of quantum physicists and people like Josephson, Brian Josephson, but also others, Henry Stapp, S-T-A-P-P is one.
So more are coming to it. More are coming around. More scientists are coming around, is what you're saying?
More what?
More scientists are coming around?
No, I'm strictly talking about quantum physicists.
Okay, more quantum physicists are coming around.
Yeah.
Dr. Roll, if we use the premise that, you know, that we all are interconnected, do you think that that we'll find some way through quantum mechanics to perhaps use quantum mechanics itself as a measurement tool for that connectivity between two people, or, you know, the entanglement? I mean, I'm not all that up to snuff on some of the intricacies of quantum mechanics, but it would seem that perhaps there'd be some way to measure the energy. And I guess that's the question I'm asking you.
Okay, there's no energy involved.
Okay.
There's no energy involved in this.
So do you think there's any way possible we'd be able to somehow verify that other than... I guess I'm not being clear.
Well, let me ask this then. If there's no energy involved, what is it?
It's correlations.
So are correlations a thing?
What? No.
Are correlations...
For instance, a correlation is... or you could say relationships or whatever, but a correlation is... A correlation is when two things are connected. That's a correlation.
But something must connect them, right?
No, nothing at all.
It would seem to me that that's the point of quantum physics then, right? Because they don't know how these two particles can communicate when they're separated, correct?
They don't ask the how. They just say, that's the way it is. And that follows from the mathematics of quantum theory. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it may sound strange for the rest of us. Well, it doesn't sound strange to me any longer, but for ordinary folks, they ask, well, there has to be something between. There has to be something, some sort of energy or some sort of stimulus that connects one thing with another. No, not at all, says quantum physics. The two things have to be connected. There has to be a prior connection between the two things. This incident.
So if no connection exists, there'll be no relationship.
No, however...
Come on, Professor.
Here's a situation. You know, quantum physicists accept the Big Bang Theory. And this means that at the beginning, there was just one tiny little thing. And this tiny little thing exploded and became everything.
Right.
As a result...
Singularity. Mm-hmm.
What?
The singularity?
I don't know. Just words. I mean, it's very simple. This so that basically everybody is connected with everything, but some things are more connected than others. The more recent the connection has been, the stronger it is, or the more correlations you find. So that's why in experiments, people in parapsychology have been working with individuals who are genetically related, emotionally related, mainly genetically and emotionally related, and have found this entanglement, these brain correlations, brain similarities between two people, for instance.
Well, there's a question in the chat room, Dr. Roll. And the question is it possible that electromagnetic fields that are naturally occurring all around us amplify the brain's energy and ability to project certain telekinesis outward to possibly be perceived as paranormal activity?
Well, there are two types of parapsychological occurrence or psi occurrences, for short, PSI.
Mm-hmm.
One is the kind that's evaluated statistically. You don't know where, for instance, an ESP test or a PK test. The usual run of ESP tests or PK tests that are analyzed statistically, you don't know where ESP or PK occurs. You just know it occurs somewhere within a string of guesses or responses. And that's the one that is explained by, you might say, standard quantum physics. And then there's another type of occurrences that I have been particularly interested in and have explored, namely strong PK, so-called RSPK, or formerly poltergeist occurrences.
Mm-hmm.
RSPK stands for recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis, recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis. And this, you don't need statistics to observe. It happens right out in the open. And you can see it yourself, as I have often done. Now, that takes energy. That takes energy. Now, according to physics, there are four types of energy, or four forces. The gravitational force, the electromagnetic force, the weak atomic force, and the strong atomic force. The electromagnetic force, well, that's when you turn on the light, for instance. The gravitational force is when a cup slips off your hand, out of your hands, and crashes to the floor. When you stumble and you fall to the floor. The weak electromagnetic force is when electrons escape their atoms, and it is what underlies electricity. The strong atomic force only comes to the fore if you split the nucleus of the atoms, which is really how the world is built up. If you split this, well, you have an atomic explosion.
Right.
So the force that we seem to be dealing with, that we definitely are dealing with, is the electromagnetic force. However, it's the electromagnetic force with, you might say, with an attitude, because in parapsychological studies, this electromagnetic force just don't happen randomly. But it's related to the emotions of the people involved. For instance, in case of RSPK, or poltergeist, if you will, there's always, or anyhow, I've always found in my studies, a hostility and tension between the RSPK agent, that's the person around whom these things happen, around whom objects move and so forth. There's always a strong negative relation between him or her and the family where they live. So that cannot be accounted for just in terms of electromagnetism. That needs another force. In other words, in addition to these four forces, the gravitational, geomagnetic, weak atomic force, strong atomic force, in addition to these, we need, let's call it a biological force, a living force, a psychic force, to explain all of nature. So it turns out that we need not just four forces, but that we need four, but that we need five. And it's up for grabs what you might call the fifth force. The most economical is probably to call it a biological force.
So you're saying then that several things, that in the cases of this RSPK activity, you're referring to that as strong PK, is that correct?
Yes, yeah.
And it usually, in your studies, you're saying that when this RSPK phenomenon has manifested, it's usually with hostile,
always.
Has a hostility about it, always? Okay.
Always, in my experiences, right.
Okay. And so would you say that the EMF, or the electromagnetic fields that are naturally occurring around us, even man-made, is there any way that they could potentially affect the brain of some people?
They are certainly involved, okay? But they, mm-hmm. but they work in harmony with, on concert with, or together with this biological force. Now, according to most physicists, all these forces, therefore four forces to begin with, are related, and it's believed that they eventually would be reduced to one force. This has already happened for the electromagnetic force and the weak atomic force. And it's thought that, well, they're all going to be eventually found out to be the same. So this would be the same. That would also involve, if that happens, this biological force. But right, the other side of the biological force is the electromagnetic force. So these two interact more than the biological force, say, with the strong atomic force or the gravitational force.
So if we take this a step further, then these many, many stories that come around that people are perceiving what they call paranormal activity, whether it's hauntings, ghosts, things moving, whatever, how would you explain these stories, you know, these many stories in the light of our discussion? Where are they connected?
Well, first of all, haunting is in a category by itself and may not even be parapsychological. Most cases of haunting are induced by anomalous geomagnetic fields. Geomagnetic fields come from the ground or from space. Geomagnetic fields or electromagnetic fields, anomalous electromagnetic fields, for instance, house wiring, or electric current. Underground streams produce electric...
Hold on one sec, Dr. Roll.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Underground streams produce electric current. Electric current produce magnetic fields, and the magnetic fields stick up and can be detected at a distance from the stream or whatever brought it or whatever caused it. So, and now the interesting thing about these anomalous fields, that they interact with the brain of humans and animals. The hippocampus, which enables us to memorize, to remember, is especially sensitive to electromagnetic fields. And so is the amygdala, the thing that underlies emotions, including panic and fear. So these emotions and these images, for instance, an image of a ghost comes from the mind of the percipient and is projected to appear in the outside. And this projection is due to a disturbed brain, which is brought on by these anomalous physical fields, electromagnetic or geomagnetic. So,
right. So they're disturbing the mind, the mechanics of the mind, to create this phenomena.
Yeah.
Perceived phenomena.
They also typically produce electrical disturbances. Equipment goes wrong. Light bulbs pop. Maybe floating lights are seen. And incidentally, these places can be dangerous for humans and animals. And I've been in a case where three hunting dogs basically were killed by these fields. And I have an investigator who spent a long time on a very strong haunting case. And he now suffers from chronic fatigue syndrome. So even investigators who spent time in these areas are in danger.
So the long and the short of this whole thing is that haunting-type phenomena, and just correct me if I'm wrong, if what you're saying, haunting-type phenomena, where people see apparitions and different things like that, is really a product of electromagnetic fields acting on the mind,
That's
the brain.
Right. So basically, parapsychology is not involved.
Right, because it's not psi phenomena.
Yeah, that's right. However, sometimes...
And we do know...
What?
I was just going to say, we do know from the work of Dr. Persinger, up, I think it's at Laurentian University in Canada, where he's done experiments with the effects of magnetic fields on the brain and how that affects the perception of the individual, where they feel that they're being observed or watched, or it can cause a lot of anxiety and fear just by the sheer application of magnetic fields. And these are very small doses of magnetic fields where, as you're talking about, Doctor, if you have underground water or other factors that may be generating these fields, their interaction could be much more powerful than what Dr. Persinger puts his folks through when he experiments with this, and therefore causing...
Just hold it for a second.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'm just wanting to illustrate your point, basically. There's a guy, his name is Don. He's a journalist, and he had ghost experiences someplace. They frightened him. He went to Persinger's place at Laurentian University, and Persinger basically reproduced the same anomalous field that it produced the guy's ghosts. And in the laboratory, this Mr. Don experienced the same ghosts as he had experienced at his own, I think, I don't know if it was his own home or some other place, but as he had experienced before, with the same panic, feelings of panic associated with it. So, Persinger, by the way, is one of the main persons, as far as I'm concerned, in parapsychology. because he is willing to look seriously at this stuff, and he has equipment to enable him to do that. Yeah, neurophysiological equipment, neuropsychological equipment, and also other types of measurements. So he's a very unique individual, and to my mind of thinking, he is the main guy in parapsychology.
Well, I have a question, and then there's a question in the chat room too. My question, though, is these people that that see these apparitions and so forth, obviously some people, it happens to some people and it doesn't happen to others. So in your experience, would it be correct to say that some individuals' brain makeup predisposes them to sensitivity to electromagnetic fields while others don't?
Well, now we are talking about haunts, sites with anomalous fields. We're not just talking about people seeing. There are also radical aberrations that have nothing to do with hauntings. Now we're just talking about these special sites. And it'd be very strange if a so-called normal person didn't have comparable experiences if exposed to these fields, these anomalous fields.
Okay.
I don't know, because it's hard to convince people. You know, come along and see mm-hmm. see what happens when you stay.
Well, then, how do you explain the apparitions then if they're different than hauntings?
It's the same. An apparition and ghost is the same.
But that,
now,
but
there are a lot of studies have been done of veridical apparitions. That's apparitions that match real people. And
so what causes those?
What?
What causes those then?
They're just collections of these cases. We don't really know what caused them in each instance. In this case, it's likely that that the people are just sensitive to these energies that may exist in the house or may exist in a site.
And you're talking about electromagnetic energies, right?
That's what I would hypothesize.
Okay.
No studies have been done of if somebody sees an apparition that matches the previous occupant in the house. Well, nobody so far that I know of have gone to the guy, got his report, and then gone to the site and see if there might be an anomalous field of the sorts we talked about.
Okay, so are you saying then that there are two types of apparitions, the one caused by the electromagnetic effects on the brain and another type? Is that what you're saying that exists?
I would say one type is caused by anomalous electromagnetic effects.
Okay.
And the other one, I think, is caused by electromagnetic effects with a psychological or biological dimension.
Okay, so you are allowing for some type of anomalous phenomena to exist.
First of all, I'm not allowing an anomalous phenomenon at all. I wish we wouldn't use that word, because when we talk about anomalous stuff, we at once, even before we consider anything seriously, we set this field apart from normal science. Now, I think it's fine that you call your organization Paranexus, and in the same way we have parapsychology,
mm-hmm.
but that does not mean that we therefore should regard parapsychologically as para in any significant sense.
I understand what you're saying, and just so you know, as I've mentioned to you in emails, the show we did almost 2 years ago had an enormous impact on the direction of Paranexus. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we've moved away from paranormal, quote-unquote, to anomalous.
Yeah.
But the reason that I'm asking the question is because I'm trying to understand what you're saying, and I'm trying to make sure I understand, in that if I recall from our previous radio show, when I asked you, do ghosts and spirits exist, if I recall correctly, you said no. Is that correct?
Well, ghost experiences certainly exist.
Sure.
Spirit experiences certainly exist. But now, if you want to dig deeper, then the question is there life after death?
Right.
That's obviously a different question.
So that's just up for grabs at this point?
Well,
we don't know.
Yes and no. So-called psychics, that is, people with above-average ESP, can pick up information about deceased individuals, especially if they're connected with you, or if they're connected with an object that the psychic handles, traditionally known as a psychometric object.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I should point, what we're dealing with here is perception of the past. And perception of the past is what we're doing all the time. If you look up at the moon you see is not the moon as it now is, but the moon as it was 1 minute, 25 seconds ago. If you look at the sun is even further in the past. Even things in right in front of our eyes and not seen exactly when they happen, because what intervenes, neuropsychological factors intervene, so that what we see in the present is not in the present, but it is in the spurious present. Spurious means false. So everything we see, parapsychological or not, absolutely everything we see is of the past.
Mm-hmm.
So what perception is past, is past perception, perception of the past. Psychometry is past perception. When people see an apparition of somebody who lived in the house and is now deceased, it's past perception, perception of stuff that went on in the past. So certainly our images survive death. That seems to be clear. The question is, does our consciousness go with these images? And that seems to be doubtful. I mean, we certainly don't think that the consciousness of the actors in a TV show, you know, is present when we watch them. So I think it's the same with these.
Well, it's kind of interesting, Dr. Roll, if you know, there's been a lot of research and a lot of stuff that's come to the media recently in regards to the near-death experience. And some of the research work that was done over in the Netherlands was, you know, fairly remarkable. I think it was published in The Lancet in 2001 in regards to folks that had had core near-death experiences that could recall events when, for all practical purposes, they were in cardiac arrest. So at a time when the body would be, you would think, neurologically and biochemically being thrown into complete and utter confusion, how would one explain the fact that these folks who were clinically dead could describe instruments or procedures that were being performed on them?
Well,
and the only reason I bring it up is because it seems to, in some way, if what they're indeed, if the research is indicating what it is, it seems to be that consciousness is something separate from the physical body.
Well, I think one has to keep the two separate. Perhaps it is separate, perhaps it's not. As far as near-death experiences are concerned, near-death experiences sometimes are associated with hypoxia, that is, insufficient oxygen supply to the brain. And that produces all sorts of images and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And also,
that would also create confusion. And hypoxia and hypercapnia, that would all, but what's been reported in some of the research is the exact opposite, that person remembers with clarity confusion.
I'm not saying that.
I'm sorry.
There's very strong indications that near-death experiences are conducive to psychic experiences, to ESP and stuff like that. Not only at the time of the NDE, but also afterwards. So, I mean, that, as you say, this is a very interesting and relevant area of study.
Well, here's the question from the chat room. This is actually from Kevin Costa, who studied under you. He's listening. He asked, could electromagnetism caused by emotions charge objects which can be detected by psychometry? Because you'd mentioned psychometry.
Yeah, well, psychometry is a little confusing term because it's also used in orthodox psychology for mental measurement. But psychometry is really past, reading of the past. In this case, the past associated with an object. You can also have you can also have perception of places. But that's sort of basically the same. So all this is past perception. And past perception is what we do every day. Except we are equipped by evolution such that events close in space-time can be perceived by our neurological standard neurological instruments, from the eyes, the occipital tract, the occipital lobe in the brain. But that doesn't, none of this that denies the fact that what is perceived is in the past. So when we point out, or when it's pointed out that really everything from watching the moon, the sun, and what's in front, right in front of us, everything is past perception. This puts psi, ESP, and the like exactly on par with normal perception.
Okay, so could psychometry be explained with the quantum entanglement of, like, the energy from emotions of a person and an object?
Certainly, events that are emotional to someone are perceived sooner than neutral events. That seems to be the case.
Okay, and Kevin also asks, is there a relationship between remote viewing and quantum physics?
Well, the remote viewing is just a different word for ESP.
Right. So, yes. according to your studies.
Yeah. Right. Exactly, yeah.
Interesting. Well, so let me ask you this question. We're getting down on our time here. How many years have you been involved in parapsychology, Dr. Roll?
Oh, not long. Just
like a year or two.
Good answer, doctor.
Just yeah. More than 50 years.
Okay, more than 50 years, did you say?
Yes.
Okay. Let me just ask you this. What for folks who are entering the field of parapsychology, trying to understand mysteries of life and so forth, you know, do you have any advice you would give them to perhaps steer them on the right path as they enter this field?
Read the journals, particularly the Journal of Parapsychology, and also the Journal of the Society for Scientific Exploration. I think it's their journal. This group publishes studies of what you might call fringe areas of science, and they have had some very good papers about parapsychology, and including some good papers by quantum physicists about parapsychology and quantum physics. So the Society for Scientific Exploration holds annual conferences, publishes this journal that I just mentioned, the Journal for Scientific Exploration. The main professional, or the only professional society in the field, is the Parapsychological Association that was formed in 1957, actually the same year I came to Duke. And it was formed at Duke by J.B. Ryan, and he made me a member of the council of this thing. So they hold annual conventions. In this year, the annual convention is going to be in Paris, France. And most of the conventions are held in the U.S., but some are held in Europe, mainly in Europe. I think there have been some in India, I don't know, but I think mostly in Europe, because that's, you know, the U.S. and Europe is where the parapsychologists are.
Mm-hmm. So read the journals, attend the conferences.
And you don't have to be an expert to become. You can be an associate of the PA. You would be a student associate of the PA and attend the conventions and so forth.
Okay. So if a person is in college, wants to get into parapsychology, since you can't really major in it, what type of related scientific disciplines would you recommend that might help them the most?
Well, first of all, they certainly should attend PA meetings, at least. And then related sciences are neuroscience and quantum physics. I mean, anthropology also plays a role, because field studies in anthropology have shown that, you know, have investigated, and some parapsychologists have tested native groups for Psi. Native Americans for Psi. So anthropology too would show a relation to Psi phenomena.
Okay. One last question from the chat room from Kevin. What are most parapsychologists working on in the field at this time? Any particular thing?
Well, I hope to go. I'm going to be in Europe at the time this meeting is, so I hope to find out then. But other than that, the emphasis in recent years has been on brain correlation studies. That is, the thing we mentioned before, that people who are connected emotionally or genetically show brain correlations if they participate in a Psi and ESP experiment.
Interesting. Well, Dr. Roll, we really appreciate the time that you spent with us tonight. We thank you very much for taking it and sharing your knowledge with us.
Well, yeah, it's always a pleasure, Dr. Roll.
And it's
an honor to have you with us. It really is.
Well, it's an honor. I'm always glad to speak, to talk to people who show some interest in this field. And I wish you and your listeners the very best.
And I also want to verbally tell you, again, just reiterate, I appreciate the occasional emails you've sent back to us. They've been encouraging, and they've meant a lot. So, and that you've also had a big impact on the direction that Paranexus is taking, and we are forever appreciative.
Well, thank you very much.
I hope you have a great night.
It just shows that you are smart.
Some people might question that, Doctor.
You have a great night, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Doctor. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Same here. Bye-bye.
Good evening.
And there you have it, Dr. Roll. You know, we are fortunate to get him on the show tonight, and thankful.
What a lovely gentleman, huh?
Yeah, you know, a lot of stuff, and of course, being the scientist that he is, you know, you got to listen close, but there were a couple of things that I think bear summing up that are interesting. You know, the concept that this haunting type phenomena are...
I don't think he deviated. I think that was pretty much where he was the last time that he was with us, and that he really feels that, I think I interpret him correctly in saying that there may be other factors involved that have nothing to do with spirits and everything to do with external factors that are impacting the biochemical processes or the electrical processes of the brain that make us perceive things that may not necessarily be there.
Well, and that's something for, paranormal investigators to think about. You know, mm-hmm. What impact are electromagnetic frequencies, fields rather, having on the client, you know? And not only that, you know, the interesting thing, he may have mentioned this in the previous show, I don't recall, but the RSPK factor, having the hostility, always having hostility. So,
well, what I wanted to ask him, and I didn't get the chance to, was, and I think I may have been onto the right thing, is that a lot of times with these agents, I think it's suppressed hostility.
Right.
It's not openly expressed.
Right.
It's internalized, and it's just building, it's like a ticking time bomb.
Right. And that it makes absolute psychological, anthropological sense, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, they're repressing it, so it's got to manifest somehow. But, you know, that's another thing to keep in mind when you're dealing with any kind of RSPK cases. You know, what's going on here? What's the family dynamic like? I mean, Grant, you and I have been talking about that for a year or more. You know, what's going on in the family?
Doug, I think the real beauty of parapsychology is it blends, the psychological factors with the other things that might actually be going on. And so what you do, to me, it seems to be a more grounded approach. A little bit more satisfying in the sense that you're not discounting the fact that strange things may occur, and we don't really know why they're occurring. But what I do find appealing is that it's something intrinsically human.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know,
as opposed to something external of us.
And we've talked about how in our opinion, parapsychology really is much broader than the typical parapsychologist would agree to. And, you know, that, I guess, enters in your term of para-anthropology. So, interesting stuff.
Well, I think there's a link there, and I think Dr., Roll also talked about that. And what I would find interesting, and maybe have to do a little personal research myself, is do native tribes or indigenous tribes have higher levels of PK? And if so, you know, it'd be interesting to, now my interest is piqued about that.
Well, listen, we're down to 10 seconds, so we've got to go. Join us next week for member call-ins, and if you're a Paranexus member, please let us know. Have a great night, and thanks for listening, everybody.
Have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks. Bye-bye.
It's Paranexus Universe.